I think, right. And this is the method issue, right? Because the patent, if I'm not mistaken, the patent describes itself as a method. I had that here a moment ago. Let me find that language for you, in case you've forgotten it. The patent says a system and method provide for establishment and use of permission sets for subscribers where client applications in a wireless communication environment are requesting location information for a particular wireless communications device from a provider of such information. Now, it's really their question, but I'll put it to you anyway. What's that got to do with financial services, or what is the exact language that I keep quoting
to
you?
Practice administration.
Financial product or financial service. There's not even the word in there.
Correct.
Financial.
Correct. The claims do not claim the practice administration or management of a financial product.
So the director's decision to institute here was arbitrary and capricious. So
the director's decision to cancel the patent is in excess of statutory jurisdiction, contrary to law, and arbitrary and capricious.
Well, but if we find that this is not a CBM patent, it's not a question of institution, is it? It's a question of jurisdiction.
That's correct. And so the proceeding would be dismissed. The cancellation would be reversed. The proceeding would be dismissed.
If we find that these are not CVMs, then what's left in view of the different patents here? What's left for us to decide?
So if you decide that neither of these is a CBM, then the 752 patent is reinstated. You would reverse that, and the other side could go and litigate that. You still would need to decide the IPR on the 205 patent only. There was an IPR on the 752 patent, but it did not institute on or did not invalidate the claims that are on appeal here. So,
anything else?
I think we're back to Your Honor's colloquy with my friend on the other side, that when you're looking at what the statute says.
I mean, this one honestly seems like I don't know what the board's doing here. I mean, it can't be that any patent that can reference a financial institution or find an ATM or something like that is a covered business method patent. Even if you think that, as we've said in our cases, that language is to be construed broadly.
I think that's exactly right. That
this is arbitrary and capricious.
We don't need to argue for a banks and brokerages definition to say that this is arbitrary and capricious, because what my friend is arguing for and what the board, this panel of the board decided in this case is indistinguishable from what Your Honor just said. That basically everything is a financial product or service, and it also reads out. I know I keep coming back to this. It reads out both used in and practice administration or management, which are important parts of the definition as well. Literally everything can be subject to CBM review. CBM, as I said before, is very powerful. You can litigate kinds of invalidity grounds that you cannot litigate in an IPR. You can litigate, there's no time limit, unlike a PGR. And of course, the different burdens and different decision maker apply compared to district court review. So if Congress was going to create something this powerful, there's a trade-off. And the two trade-offs are it's time limited to 8 years, and it's limited only to practice administration or management of financial product or service. And that's why it's so important for the court, having concluded that this is part of the judicially reviewable final written decision, to enforce it here and to tell the board that it is exceeding its statutory jurisdiction.
Now, they could win in this case if they can convince us to overrule Versada, right?
And hold that even if you held that it's not reviewable on appeal from the final written decision, we would still submit that, as in Part 3 of the dissent in Versada, that this is so in excess that it still would not be barred from review, because it is, shall we say, extra hard to prohibit judicial review of something that is in clear derogation of statutory limits on jurisdiction.
You would invoke Judge Hughes's savings clause in his Versada dissent.
Well, I think that we could, because the error in here is so clear, I think we could win every which way. We, of course, think that essentially no matter what the Supreme Court does in Cuozzo, this court right now says that most things are not reviewable under Cuozzo, but that this the jurisdiction of the board to institute and decide and cancel a patent on the CBM is reviewable. We think that that is not going to change. Of course, if the Supreme Court said something extraordinarily broad, then I'm sure we could submit 28J letters and talk about what the import of that decision was. I would be happy to answer any more questions about the definition. I could say just a few words about the 101 issue, unless the court wants to. I don't want to tax the court's patience. But on the 101 issue, we think that if this were something that should be litigated before the board and not before a district court, that this is a this is directed to patent eligible subject matter because it's dealing with a problem that does not arise in the brick and mortar context. It is a problem specific to the wireless network context in, to which the claims are directed, and it solves a fundamental problem of privacy. This is listed right in column one of the specification, a problem of privacy that that is specific to wireless users who are all the time generating little electronic breadcrumbs indicating where they are located. That creates a new privacy problem, and this is an improvement in the way networks work because it allows subscribers to understand that their information is being held privately except to the extent that they wish to have it disseminated for some useful and valuable purpose. We think that that is not directed to an abstract idea, and even if it were, it would be patent. It would rest on something sufficiently, the something more that the court was talking about at step two of Alice, and for that reason, we think that it would survive 101 review. But we think that this court should not decide that, of course. It should let a proper tribunal decide that after the CBM is reversed. If the court has no further questions, I'm happy to reserve my remaining
time. We have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I would suggest that this patent, the 752 patent, sits in the sweet spot for the type of patent that Congress was concerned about when it initiated and brought into being this transitional program under Section 18. It's patents that issued in the late 1990s and 2000s that are directed to...
Can you point to me any language in any representative claim that talks about any kind of financial service or financial information or anything remotely close to what we found to be that in our other cases?
I think that this is falls squarely within the provision in Sight Sound and Blue Calypso when you look at dependent claims 11 and 22.
And there, what? I'm sorry.
Dependent claims 11 and 22. It's on A478.
Are those claims at issue?
Those claims are not challenged in the proceeding, but that doesn't matter with respect to ascertaining whether a patent is CBM eligible. If any claim in the patent, whether it's a challenge.
It is the case that if any one claim in a patent is a CBM claim, then the whole patent is a CBM. Is that your position?
That's my position. That's the PTO's position, and that's this court, I think, is recognized. So if you look at dependent claims 11 and 22, so just to set this...
Are we on A478?
A478 and A479. Claim 11 is on 478 and 12 is on 479. And just to set the stage for that, if I could direct your attention to A465, which is figure 1 of the...
There is a reference in claim 11 to billing functions. Is that what you're talking about? Perform at least one of automated billing functions?
Yes, and I can explain what that is in the context of figure 1, which is on A465. So there are two ways in which the client application, which is element 24 in figure 1, sits at the heart of financial transactions and at the heart of a business method. The one that the PTAB found persuasive was that the client application is a proxy for a business, and through the subscriber profile, it allows you to consummate a transaction between a subscriber and a business once the, you know, the location information.
You know, I may have been a little hasty in agreeing with you that if any one claim has a financial product or service in it, then the patent becomes a CBM. Because the statute doesn't read that way, does it? Let's look at the statute one more time. The statute says, for purposes of this section, the term covered business method patent means a patent that claims a method or corresponding apparatus for performing that. Means a patent that claims. It doesn't say a claim. It says a patent that claims. Now, the patent is the overall written description, all the claims taken together, what we call the specification. So you'd really have to look at the whole patent, i.e. the invention, wouldn't you?
Well, you do, and the board has to, on a, and this is a fact-intensive inquiry that Congress has delegated to the agency, you have to look at the scope of the claim. And you cannot ascertain the scope of the claim without looking to the specification. And if a claim is financially neutral, so to speak, and any talented patent application drafter can draft a financially neutral claim that can then be read onto you know, any number of business activities, you have to turn to the scope of the application, or sorry, the scope of the patent to figure out whether it's a CBM patent. And the client application here, if we go to figure one, sits at the heart of two separate financial transactions. One is the money that can pass in between a wireless subscriber and the client application. If in fact the location information is provided, then and this.
Where in the patent does it say money passes? Are you relying on the billing function in claim 12?
Well, certainly in dependent claims, I think it was 11 and 22. That's automatic billing that the access manager, which is the wireless service provider.
I just want to make sure you didn't make these arguments before the board.
Well, in our...
Did the board rely on 11 and 22?
The board did not rely on 11 and 22 in finding that this patent was CBM eligible. But in our petition for...
What did the board rely on?
The board relied on the client application in claim 25 sitting at the heart of basically financial activity. So the client application is a proxy for a business that wants to push advertising or special offers to wireless subscribers if they're permitted to have their location information. So the board looked at the client application and then turned to the scope, the full scope of the patent, and determined that that's basically a business method.
Where does it say anything about advertising in claim 25? I just read it quickly, but...
Claim 25 doesn't have that. There the board was relying on the incidental to or complementary to a financial activity.
But it still has to be somewhere in the patent, doesn't it?
Well, it is in deep. It is in.
You can't just make up the notion that, oh, well, somebody smart could use this patent for financial reasons and make money. It has to be in the patent.
Well, it's certainly in the patent. It's in the specification.
Are you talking about that one line? I mean,
I'm not
sure. This one's tough for me. There is one line that the board cited to. I think you cited to it out of this entire patent, which is talking about preferences for location services and privacy. I just don't see how that isn't arbitrary and capricious when you pluck these very... I mean, 11 and 12 that the board had relied on, and maybe that's a better argument, but that wasn't their basis.
Well, it's not, but there's no sense in remanding to the board when the board can simply turn to those dependent claims and find an express billing application.
I have a little trouble with that theory, because that theory suggests that... Let's go back to my hypothetical about the stent. that after I get through describing my stent and everything else, I can tack on a dependent claim somewhere down claim 436 and say, and by the way, this invention is designed to make money, and the way to make money is to have a bank account or whatever. I don't think that makes it a CBM, do you?
Well, on those facts, perhaps not, but those aren't the facts that we have here. And for a claim to be, again,
the facts of Judge Plager's scenario are pretty close to here. How are they different?
Well, I think they're very different. A client application here is not a stent. It's a proxy for a business that is looking to conduct business with cell phone subscribers.
This is a method to locate things around you.
No, it's not a method to locate things. It's a method that provisions where a wireless network provider for a fee will provide location information to a business so that a business can thereafter target subscribers in a cellular phone network. There's two ways in which this client application, according to the patent specification, sits at the heart of two different ways of two different types of financial transactions. One is the client application targeting cell phone subscribers, or the business targeting cell phone subscribers, if it in fact gets the location information, which is what Claim 25 is directed to. It's provisioning the location information for a fee.
But it doesn't. Where does it say for a fee?
It doesn't expressly say that.
It's saying it says for a fee when it doesn't say it in the claims. I mean, yes. I mean, that would make it much more like a business method patent if it said, here's this service. If you opt into it, you know, you can gain better access to clients. I mean, that sounds like the pricing algorithm. But this is, even when you start out with the background and the invention in the summary, it's all about privacy issues and letting users put forth their preferences about privacy issues. I see almost nothing in this patent about providing business services. And put, I mean, 11 and 22, if the board had relied on that, you might have a better argument there. It still seems pretty tenuous. But I don't see how we can look at 11 and 22 when that's not the basis of the board's decision.
Well, the Chenery Doctrine did not do away with the doctrine of harmless error. And Section 706 also...
Can we just put aside 11 and 22? I'm not going to look at them. So beyond 11 and 22, what do you have that suggests that this is a business method patent?
Well, we have the discretion of the agency in defining its mission, in determining what patents are CBM eligible. And this patent is a patent that issued in 2000, right in the time frame that Congress was concerned about, and it's an invalid patent under Section 101. So I think the core of the agency's authority in...
Congress didn't enact a bill saying you can bring any 101 challenge on any patent to the PTO. Maybe they should have, but they didn't. So, I mean, your timing argument and your 101 argument still isn't getting back to any language in this patent, in its claims or specifications, that talk about a business method.
I think that if this court is going to look at claims that are financially neutral, that don't have an express hook to a financial activity such as the exchange of money for goods and services, and say that those patents are not eligible for CBM review, then that would thwart Congress's express intent to delegate to the agency to define its mission under
Section 18. But there's got to be some limit to the scope of the argument that you're making. If I have a patent and the patent is to a method to shovel dirt, and I put in claim under claim 25, and by the way, I'm going to sell the dirt. Is that a method? Is that a CBM? It's not.
I think we have to leave that to the discretion of the agency and determine whether this decision was arbitrary and capricious.
Well, argue that it is or it's not.
No, it's not a question of arbitrary and capricious. It's a question of whether the statute, properly construed, supports that interpretation. There's no arbitrary and capricious standard involved at all. This is a question of statutory interpretation.
Well, where Congress has authorized the agency to conduct rulemaking to implement the statute, and this is a CBM eligibility is a procedural rule. It doesn't CBM eligibility does not substantively impact patentability.
Wait a minute. What is the CBM eligible rule that the agency has adopted? You're not talking about the decision in this case, are you?
No, I'm talking about the agency's so Section 326, which is the PGR provision that gives the agency the authority to establish rules on whether to institute a proceeding. Combined with Section 18 that gives the agency the authority to determine, to implement the transitional this transitional program for review of covered business method patents.
That's fine.
Delegates to the agency the authority to determine whether a patent is CBM eligible.
And only if it conforms to the statutory requirements for a CBM. And that's, I'm sorry, but we've got a case that's squarely on that point, and that's Versada. Versada says that what is before us this morning is the final written decision by the PTAB in this particular case. And in that final written decision, they are assuming that they have jurisdiction over the patent involved in this case under the statute. And that's the only question before us. And they say they do. Well, that's not a question of arbitrary and capricious. That's a question of have they read the statute correctly? Or have I missed something? Am I wrong about that?
I don't think so, but I guess I'm just out of
Billy,
time.
Billy, I would think you would be citing Blue Calypso, which says we review that decision of whether it's a CBM patent or not under an arbitrary or capricious standard.
And cite sound, and the fact that one panel might come out a different way on these facts, on these claims. It does not make it arbitrary.
It's not going to help you very much in this case, because even under an arbitrary capricious standard, given that there's nothing in this patent about a covered business method, it's arbitrary and capricious.
Well, you have the board's determination that a client application, and this is in column 11 of the patent at line 12, client applications may be service or goods providers whose business is geographically oriented, and those businesses want to connect with cell phone subscribers. And claim 25 controls that information and that exchange of information so that businesses can conduct and consummate financial transactions with cell subscribers. And then according to the dependent claims, that the wireless service provider who is controlling that information can automatically bill the service providers every time they suggest that information. And that falls squarely within...
You can make the argument that the whole patent is part of the record, and therefore 11 and 22 are part of the record, even if the board did not specifically identify them as the basis for their CBM decision.
They certainly are, and Section 706 mandates whole
record. Why didn't you make these arguments below, before the board?
I got sidetracked in responding to that before. In its petition for inter partes review, this is at A81, Google said that the 752 patent, and I'm reading, also covers financial aspects that facilitate a financial transaction, such as data logs in support of billing and other administrative tasks.
You said at the... Sorry, I just want to clarify. You just said you were reading from the petition for inter-parties review.
No.
You mean the petition for CBM review?
Yes, I'm sorry. If I said inter-parties review, I misspoke.
Because you asked for inter-parties here and you didn't get it.
No, we did get it, and claim 25 was found.
You didn't get as much as you wanted.
Right. The board didn't institute on the dependent.
Sorry, I'm leading you down a sidetrack. You're off. Answer.
Sorry. So in its petition for inter partes review, Google pointed to that specific automated billing feature that dependent claims 11 and 22 are directed to. Now, in its institution decision, the board didn't latch on to that and didn't latch on to those claims, but it could have, and there's no need to send this back.
We can't review the institution decision. It's unreviewable.
The aspect of the institution decision that says this is a CBM eligible claim is reviewable.
Give us your concluding thoughts, because you're well over your time.
Right. So, again, the client application sits at the heart of two business methods actually, one for charging for the provision of location information, which is in the dependent claims, and the other for to assist in consummating financial transactions with the subscribers that businesses use. And I'd submit that this patent sits at the heart of the type of patent that Congress was concerned about, because it arose in that period between State Street and Bilski, and it's directed to unpatentable subject matter.
Thank you very much. Councillor Jay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few thoughts in rebuttal. First, on claims 11 and 22, the passage that my friend just read from is not actually citing claim 11 or 22. It's citing the specification. You will search in vain for claim 11 or 22 anywhere in the petition mentioned by number. And my friend says that a harmless error is still part of this court's review, but so are exhaustion and preservation. And in addition, this court's Chenery Doctrine indicates that when the agency has a layer of discretion, the court shouldn't just say, well, harmless error, the agency probably would have exercised its discretion the same way anyway. The agency presented with a petition saying claims 11 and 22 are eligible, but we want to institute a covered business method review on several other claims, might well have reacted quite differently than it did when it thought that the claims being challenged were in fact covered business method claims. In addition,
but that's pure speculation.
It is, and it's exactly why this court doesn't engage in speculation like that.
So why are you engaging in it?
I'm urging the court not to. on the question of whether the actual challenge claims are covered business method claims, my friend suggests a business embodiment. But if you look right before the passage that he read from at the top of column 11, you'll see that emergency services and businesses wanting to keep track of their own employees are the first two embodiments listed. Those are not financial at all. Financial, commercial, whatever word you want to use. Ultimately, arbitrary and capricious review is not a rubber stamp. Action not accordance with a statute or not otherwise in accordance with law is arbitrary and capricious. It is invalid under the APA. We urge the court to hold exactly that as to this decision here, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you very much.
We gave you both a pretty hard time.